So over the course of 4 years, between 1968 and 1972, an area that was 90% Jewish became 90% Black and Latino. The shift is a tale of what happens when good intentions in terms of housing policy are left unchecked. And it's all part of our collective hidden history. Lou Finfer joins us today in studio to delve into some of this history. Lou, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Jim Vrabel, author of A People's History of the New Boston. Jim, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
So I want to set the scene here. This whole story idea came from a newsletter that I've been working on for newcomers to the Boston area, the Newcomer's Field Guide to Boston, which launches this fall. Please sign up at wbur.org/newsletters. Lou Finfer, let's set the scene a little more about going back to the mid-1960s. In the heart of Mattapan, this was a Jewish neighborhood. What was life like for the folks there when it was a center of Jewish life?
Well, it was very vibrant, and people used to talk about the wall at Franklin Field. Franklin Field is a big park in Dorchester in that area and has a wall that's you can sit on, and how people of all ages would gather in groups. It was, you know, a huge park, so it was a huge wall. So the teenagers of 13 to 15 were in this group, and the teenagers, you know, 15 to 20, and it went on to the elderly gatherings. It was all there. So it was, and there were settlement houses, you know, had the Lena Park Community Center was called the Hecht House then, was a settlement house recreation area. There were lots and lots of temples and all kinds of shop, you know, like kosher butchers and all those kind of things that went with that kind of life. It wasn't 100% Jewish, but it was probably about 2/3 Jewish, that those areas of Mattapan and the what I would call Western Dorchester, that's like Franklin Field, Franklin Park kinds of areas.
This wasn't always a Jewish neighborhood. If you go back far enough, it was farmland, and then it was settled by other immigrants, folks from Ireland, and then the Jewish folks came in early 20th century.
It was probably more in the 20s, because they moved down from Roxbury in there over a generation. I don't know if there were that many Irish Catholics in between. It was probably Protestant, and then became more Jewish, I think.
Okay, so the key question here is what happened? 90,000 Jewish folks living in this area from Mattapan Square all the way to Franklin Park, that area. Things start to change when Boston banks begin a program with City Hall to increase home ownership for Black Bostonians. And it was called Boston Banks Urban Renewal Group, BBURG. This was in response to two things. The 1968 Housing Act that banned discrimination in home loans, and the assassination of Martin Luther King. Jim Vrabel, you say these were good intentions, but it was disastrous for some neighborhoods.
It was disastrous, especially for these neighborhoods. But it was part of a time when government decided that cities needed rebuilding, and they wanted big ideas. The federal government was putting a lot of money into helping cities, and local politicians wanted to have something to run on and have big ideas and big programs. The assassination of Martin Luther King in 1968 was what got BBURG restarted. It was actually conceived in 1961, but somehow got lost in the shuffle of urban renewal and was never enacted. But Kevin White, as mayor in 68, needed something to show the minority community that he was listening and that he was doing something, and dusted off BBURG and made a quick announcement and quickly implemented the program, and it turned out probably too quickly.
So this was a form of redlining, right? Which is a practice that goes back decades before, I think, back to the 40s or earlier, where it's a discriminatory practice where people are being denied mortgages, insurance policies based on race or ethnicity and which areas we're talking about. But then there was this phenomenon here called blockbusting. There's this really eye-opening article called Confessions of a Blockbuster that Lou Finfer, I think you came across this. And I want to read just a bit of what this says. It was written by a real estate agent who was taking part in blockbusting in this neighborhood. And they wrote anonymously, banks had decided to take a certain area and designate it with a red pen, Mattapan and parts of Dorchester. We're going to finance minorities in this area so that they can get a house with no money down. I wasn't out to help any minorities. I was out to make a buck for myself. And I thought a future fortune was certainly there. Lou, you were also there at that time. Talk about the blockbusting that you saw as a housing activist in the neighborhood.
So this goes back to the Housing Act of 1968, a federal law that outlawed housing discrimination for the first time. Before that, the guidelines of the federal government on housing had phrases in it like maintain homogeneous neighborhoods. That was what, and then with this change, African Americans could get mortgages, but they were restricted by the redlining by the banks that they could only get the mortgages in parts of Dorchester and Mattapan. They couldn't go to Hyde Park, they couldn't go to Quincy, they couldn't go to Newton, just in those places. And then 12 real estate firms opened offices around the corner of Morton and Blue Hill in that area, and they started soliciting. Blockbusting means realtors solicit sales and use fear to increase the sales. So they sent letters, they dropped flyers, they knocked on doors, all those practices to get to encourage people to sell. And then it says in the article things that people had heard about. They sat there and brainstormed a story, kinds of stories that would scare people. One of the stories they used was, we're going to say to this homeowner, oh, this family's moving across the street from you, and a black family with six kids is going to move in, and their oldest son raped a white woman, and he's getting out of Walpole Prison in 3 months. Do you want to live across the street from him? Those
just
are the
total fiction,
yes,
designed to terrorize people, and it worked.
It worked.
And the realtors were profiting off of it big time. We're talking about Mattapan's history as a former Jewish community hub in this edition of our Radio Boston segment, Hidden History. We have Lou Finfer, head of the Massachusetts Action for Justice organization, and Jim Vrabel, author of A People's History of the New Boston. Lou, coming back to that aspect of blockbusting that you witnessed, because that's where you started your career as a young 20-something housing organizer, talk about the incidents of crime that took place. There was an acid attack, something about the Torah in one of the temples. How was that played on by these realtors?
Well, just as the area, started to change, you know, crime was more striking to people when it was a crime that was a black on white or something like that. It was more striking to people from their experience. But this was like institutionalized crime. Rabbi Zerlenmeyer, who was the rabbi in a major temple on Morton Street, B'nai Torah, and he lived in a house that was owned by the synagogue for the rabbi. It was the end of Dead End Street, Glen Hill Street in Mattapan. So 11 o'clock one morning, he had just come back from a meeting of clergy to discuss this Bieber glass-busting issue and what they could do. He'd just come back from a meeting on that. His doorbell is rang. He's on the phone with his mother, and the two teenagers are at the door. One of them hands them a note, lead the Jewish racists out of Mattapan. The other one threw powdered acid in his face, and then they just left. They didn't rob his house. That was all that happened, but it had the desired effect. He tried to actually cover it up, the rabbi Zerlenmeyer, because he knew it would lead to fear, but it just got out, and then it was publicized. And 2 months later, the trustees of the temple announced that they were closing the temple and moving to West Roxbury. And they hadn't consulted him. They didn't consult the members, and there was actually a fist fight between one of the board members and one of the temple members in the sanctuary on the high holidays. You know, this is the kind of thing that was spurned by this kind of effort. So it's really tragic.
I want to sort of bring this into the current context. This is happening, this history of the Jewish community in Mattapan, parts of Dorchester, a few years before busing starts in Boston, a tumultuous time in the city that we obviously hear a lot more about. There's something to gain by trying to pit these groups, the Jews and Black Bostonians, against each other. Jim, if you would talk about how that era of blockbusting in Mattapan sort of delivers us into the period of busing and beyond.
Sure. I'd like to give credit first to Hillel Levine and Larry Harmon for the book they wrote, The Death of a Jewish Community.
I have it right here. It's an amazing book, really.
It's a great book. And the subtitle is A Tragedy of Good Intentions. And Biberg and busing can be seen as very similar. This is a public policy. The city was involved in this. It wasn't just the banks. It wasn't just the realtors. It wasn't just the private sector. The city was involved, and because it was involved, it had a responsibility to make sure that the details of public policy were correct, that they paid attention to how people lived and could anticipate outcomes. The idea of dumping this much mortgage money into one small area for a certain group, first-time African-American homeowners, had the effect of setting all this off, the panic selling, the blockbusting, the violence, the rage, and eventually driving one group out of the city, replacing it with another. It should be noted that not only did the original homeowners leave Boston, but that the new homeowners came in, half of them within 5 years had those mortgages foreclosed on and lost their homes.
So they weren't set up for success exactly.
They weren't set up for success. They weren't screened very well, just like the recent mortgage scandals we've had across the country. And they weren't given home repair loans because they weren't federally subsidized, as the mortgages were. So the design of the program was wrong, and it could have been foreseen to be wrong. Similarly with busing, the idea of for a good intention for integrating the schools and for desegregating the schools, a plan was drawn up. But the plan was not sold to the community, did not heed community wishes, did not try to preserve ways of life. And people responded en masse by leaving Boston. 30,000 of the children were taken out of the Boston public schools within 5 years, and most of them and their parents left the city. So the details of public policy really matter.
I want to end this segment by talking about some of the positive changes. Because
can we talk about the victimization of the African-American homeowners in this situation, too?
I'll give you 10 seconds to touch on that.
Okay.
Please.
So the African-American homeowners, when you got an FHA-insured mortgage, which the banks gave them, they were supposed to be inspected by the government, and the seller had to correct structural defects. They didn't do those inspections. We called them window inspections, as is drive up and say it looks good. Happened all over the country. We had to work on a national effort to enable people to file claims, and we organized 600 Black homeowners to file claims against the government. But there was another problem. Since they were FHA homeowners, the banks could foreclose, and they would foreclose quicker. We called this fast foreclosure. They could foreclose if someone's 2 months behind, and then they could deed the building back to the federal government, get all their mortgage money. The federal government didn't know how to manage 1,000 foreclosed buildings that led to abandonment and disinvestment and deterioration in that neighborhood. So put yourself in the shoes of an African-American homeowner. You buy your first home. It's an integrated area. It's sound. And then all of a sudden, the whites are all moving. People next to you are getting foreclosed on. Those buildings become abandoned. And, your kind of dream is not a very good dream.
Well, that was Lou Finfer, director of the Massachusetts Action for Justice, and Jim Vrabel, author of A People's History of the New Boston. Thanks to you both for coming in.